Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show, the DL Link Show on 101.9 High FM. Nikki Seberini here, and delighted to be with you so late into December. And really looking back on the year that has passed and finding those wonderful things that we are so grateful for, perhaps highlighting the lessons that maybe were a little bit painful that we get to learn from. And then know that when we are so present and so in the moment and we're able to breathe through it all, we make way for a spectacular 2025. Well, I think that today's show is going to be setting that tone. We're going to be focusing on two books. My first guest, Andrea Dale Berzon, wrote a book, Jennifer's Journey. A long writing, long journey this has been for Andrea, writing about her late daughter, Jennifer, who passed away as a result of what started off as a skin melanoma. And then it metastasized, and that is Andrea Berzon's story. And then Donna Ashworth, she's an international number one best-selling author of Wild Hope. She has an ability of putting pen to paper and expressing deep feelings, ideas, inspirations that seem to reach straight into your heart and kind of pull a few strings, and there's so much resonance and connection. Last year, Donna was on the show, and we shared her stories about Wild Hope. And this year, we're going to be looking at Growing Brave. So really, just I'm really looking so forward to this show today. So we'll start off with Andrea Berzon. Welcome, Andrea. Thank you so very much for joining us.
And thank you for having me on the show today. It's really a pleasure.
Oh, well, it's lovely to have you, Andrea. And you came past my house a few weeks ago and you dropped off the book. And it's always, you know, it's always a reminder how every human being has this huge history and huge story, and everyone has stories to tell, lessons to learn, love to share. And when you dropped off the book, I had no idea what I was in for. And it's quite a story, Andrea, your story of your life, but more specifically, Jennifer's journey, your learning from it. And you yourself, I mean, you're a primary school teacher and you've helped with preschool. And I know that Jennifer passed all the way in 2014. And here we are 10 years later talking about the book. So perhaps you can just fill the audience in. What took you so long? What was that journey post Jennifer's passing that got you to write the book?
So actually, let me just, put the dates in perspective. Jennifer started getting ill in 2014. And it was about three and a half years later, in May 2017, that she actually passed after this cancer. And it was just, being with her and going through this journey with her, this very difficult journey, was not easy. It really wasn't easy. And just being there and trying to help her as best as I could. And also, she wasn't very keen on sharing and talking about her illness. I know that she shared her illness with her husband and one of her siblings, and she didn't really share that much in terms of how she was feeling about her illness. She kept saying, "Oh, this thing is bugging me and it's irritating me. I've got work to do, but I've got to deal with going into hospital to have some cyst removed." That was her whole attitude towards this illness. And she actually never mentioned the C word, the big C. She also never mentioned her actual mortality and the finality of her life. She never went there with me or with her dad. And when she passed, I just felt that I needed some kind of an outlet to express my grief. And that's when I thought, I'm going to just start writing some journals. And I did. I started with one journal. And when I got through, I think I was on about the third journal, I suddenly thought, you know, I've been speaking to many people over the years, and quite a few of these people have written their own books about either their late partner or a child, or even their own journey going through illness, and how it really helped with, you know, with healing. And it was a very cathartic way of working through the grief. So I decided, you know, I'm going to carry on writing, and I'm then going to look into publishing the book. And that's what happened. And it started 2 weeks. I started writing 2 weeks after Jennifer passed away. And it took me about 4 years to actually physically write the book. I didn't want to type it up. I wanted it to just flow through a pen as such. And I did. The words just flew, and I'd have to go and buy another journal quickly before I forgot something. And that's how it went. And then I typed it onto, you know, typed it on, you know, onto the computer. And then I started with the editing. And then I was looking at, am I going to self-publish, or am I going to publish it through through an actual known editor? And over the years, I'd spoken to various people who had written books, and most of them, the high percentage of them, had said that I should self-publish, as many of the out there publishers, they actually adjust the book and change it in a way that will suit the readers, and knowing who will buy the book and what way they'll buy the book. And I thought, I don't want my words to be changed. I don't want it to be somebody else's story, but with mine and Jennifer's information. So I went the self-publishing route, and it was really the best decision that I could have made.
Wow, Andrea. I mean, that's quite a journey. And also, I mean, you talk about 4 years of writing, and we all know how cathartic writing can be. And I know from my personal experience, when I start writing something and I'm finished writing, and it could be just something in the moment for 10 or 20 minutes that I'm writing, I just want to put it down on paper, I feel like a different person, the person who started writing to the person who finished the writing. And I'm wondering, over 4 years writing this, you know, there was obviously, and we'll go into Jennifer's story, but there was a lot, obviously, that you were working through. It must have been hugely cathartic. But did you feel, after 4 years of writing, that you had shifted, or the story had shifted? Did it still seem like the same story after 4 years?
Well, it did. It did seem like, you know, it was the story, but there was definitely a shift in the way I was seeing everybody around me. And also, many things came out about myself, came out about Jennifer, and came out about the people that I'd written about in the book, in terms of my view of them and my view of myself. So there definitely was a change in that journey, because the journey was a journey also of growth, and hope as well, besides the grief.
Yeah. So there was lots of that. So then what made you, after the 4 years, decide, I want to put this out there? I want other people to know the story. I want people to know Jennifer's journey.
So it was just the understanding and the knowledge of being around people who had done the same thing. They had started writing it for themselves, and just felt all that, those emotions would possibly help somebody else who might be going through a similar situation. But I knew that by doing that, by putting it out there, all the emotions that I shared in the book was now going to be shared with strangers, or whoever felt they wanted to read that book. And I knew that it was going to happen. And I thought, you know what, this is my journey, my growth. And but I also wanted other people to understand that they're not alone. They're not alone in their journey, in whatever way they might have lost somebody close to them. And that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to put it out there and to publish it.
And you did that so well, Andrea. And as you say, you know, because you delve into just to, because the audience will know very early into reading the book, that Jennifer isn't your biological daughter. In fact, she's your niece, she's your brother's daughter. And therein begins this journey, because it really is this journey, this how you throughout the book, because your brother had issues with drugs, and he had issues with his ex-wife, and so there was this continual pull to try and help Jennifer and her brother, and yet you got this continual resistance. And so there's this interplay of you wanting to be her mom, but you're her auntie, and then all the resistance that goes with that. Did you feel, you know, you also write about your children, obviously cousins, and so there are a lot of the family dynamics that you go into with the book. Do you feel that since publishing the book, people have approached you and they've gained an insight into a role they've played, your brother, for example?
So interesting with my brother, when I received the actual proof copy, which was exactly the same copy as the one that I'd gifted to you, and I showed it with the family, and I showed my brother. And the interesting thing is, he just opened the book, and he opened the book to the chapter that was about him. And he said, "Look what I've done. I've opened to my chapter." I said, "Well, you are part of the journey." But I do, he's got a copy of the book, and I do know that up until this point, he hasn't read the book. He's got it, and it's, you know, at home with him, but I know, you know, that he hasn't, you know, he's mentioned that he hasn't read the book, and he's not sure whether he's actually going to read the book. So, you know, because I know, I mean, there's been, you know, various people that I know that it's possibly upset them if they've read it, and they know who's, you know, the people are. But also, I've had some really amazing feedback from people and that have read the book, that know me but don't know me that well. You know, they're acquaintances from around, you know, which whatever way. And they've said to me, they just can't believe this, the way I wrote the book and the fact that I shared all this information. And a couple of people have also lost children. And they said to me that after reading the book, so much what I'd written about my emotions resonated with them as well, that they've also wanted to just sit and chat and just go through certain sections of the book and relate it to their lives. So it's been quite an interesting new part of the journey.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be, Andrea. You know, as you said, this is your story. You knew that maybe some people would be upset because you don't, you know, it's people's names, it's relatives, it's there, it's your story of what happened. And I'm sure you will, you know, through this process, get all these reactions. But when you start to interact with people that you've touched in the way that you've wanted to, you know, as part of a healing journey or their experience or whatever, you know, they're still processing. That's pretty amazing, Andrea. And it must be amazing for you to experience that. So let's talk about Jennifer, because Jennifer, I'm just trying to remember when I read it, when she was diagnosed, I know that there was first a cyst that she found, or a little mole that she found on her scalp. And then was it just removed and then it came back? Was she already married or did it happen before she got married?
It happened before she was married. She was actually engaged. They had quite a long engagement. But that was, you know, that was their choice. And she did. She found this little bump, this little mole on the top of her head. And she went to the doctor and he removed it. And he said, it's so small, he's not going to send it away. For whatever reason, he said he's not sending it away. And then about 6 weeks later, Jen said to me, she said, you know, Ma, she said, this thing has come back. I said, okay, you've got to go back to the doctor. So she went back to the doctor, and the doctor said to her, he's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna touch this growth because he's not happy with the look of it. And that's when the whole process started with going to various doctors. And she went to a specialist who also said, this is for a plastic surgeon to look at. He said, I don't want to touch it. Mm. And we went to the plastic surgeon and he looked at it. He said, you need to have it out removed as soon as possible. And so that's when it all began.
And you say,
when, you know,
yes, yeah. And once it was diagnosed, so this, it started off as this melanoma. What did the doctor say the prognosis was like? Because Jennifer was young.
Yeah, she was. And the really the sad part of it is when we went, Jennifer and I went to meet the particular plastic surgeon post her surgery, and we were sitting in this beautiful office. I will never forget the whole environment of the office. And we were each sitting on a separate chair. And the doctor said, he said, Jen, he said, 98% of people have this tumor. And he said, we call it a tumor because of the nature of its look. And he said, 98% of people who have this tumor, the tumor is benign. And he said, unfortunately, you are in the 2%. And she didn't ask him and say, well, what then? What's going to happen to me? Mm. He said, now you need to go and see an oncologist so that treatment can be started. And while I was sitting there, I just heard this information. And in my head, I just said to myself, oh my goodness, how long are you going to be with us? And it wasn't a negative. It wasn't like I preempted what was going to happen. That was my initial thought. How long are you going to be with us? When he said it's 2% of people have malignant. And every time we went to the various oncologists and the radiologists for oncology and the professors, when they were giving a percentage, unfortunately, Jen was always, well, not unfortunately then, but the percentages were always 60-40. 60 that the surgery will work, or 60 that the interferon chemotherapy will work, and 40% that it won't. And it didn't matter which doctor it was, which specialist, they all had this percentage. There was a higher rate and a lower rate. And I just kept thinking to myself, Jen, I think that you're in the lower section. And I don't know, it was just the most weirdest thoughts that kept coming. And I wasn't being negative about it. Mm. I think I just had some form of, I don't know if it was an intuition or an understanding or something, because each time it got worse. And the doctor would say, you know, it looks like you're in the 40%. There's a 40% chance of recovery. And it just went throughout the 3.5 years, that's how it kept going in terms of the percentage of survival. Mm.
So, I mean, the doctors were never painting a particularly promising picture. And you saying that Jennifer never used the word cancer, that she didn't fully acknowledge that this is what she had. It was almost like a hindrance that she had to just get through the next treatment or the next surgery or removing of us, whatever it was. And I'm wondering, Andrea, because, you know, for people who are still going to be reading the book, and we've sort of alluded to this very complicated relationship with, you know, your brother and his ex-wife. And really, Jennifer and her brother had an awful time. There were times when her mother was just not around. You were always trying to fight to have her with you, but you were putting up with so much. And so Jennifer really experienced a life where so many awful things were happening to her, but she had to find a way of coping and putting a smile on her face. And do you think that that was her attitude when it came to cancer? You know, if she just ignores it, perhaps it'll go away.
Absolutely. And that was Jen. You know, she would, because of her earlier years of upbringing and the difficulties and the challenges that her and her brother experienced, she just tried to be the strong one, always the strong one. And even before, just before she passed, when we were all at the hospital, it was probably 2 days before, and her brother walked out of the room and he was just crying. And I said, "What?" Well, I mean, I knew what was wrong. And he said, "My protector is going." And that was the first time that he actually said it verbally to me, that, you know, he knew that his sister was not going to survive this. And he said, "My protector is not going to be there anymore for me." Mm. And he was the older brother. You know, yeah. He was the older of the two siblings. Yeah.
Yeah, the dynamic, their journey, their experience, quite extraordinary, Andrea, with you always being there, you know, this mom, this aunt mom, always trying to save them and be them and give them a normal life and normal experiences, but obviously challenging Jennifer's real mother, who really, unfortunately, was maybe not necessarily the healthiest person in their life to be bringing them up. Before we do say goodbye, Andrea, I, you know, what also touched me was how Jennifer wanted to Magai. It was important for her to be Jewish. And she went through and tried to go through the process. Her husband is Jewish. Her father is Jewish. And you managed to find an extraordinary rabbi.
Absolutely. Without him, he was right from the beginning. He was a very, very special person. He's immigrated now during COVID. But we often communicate on social media, you know, and he supported Jen even through the hard times when her husband wasn't really supporting her in this conversion process and the Magaing process at times, you know. And it was just amazing that we had the rabbi who was there and that we could go through the process with Jen in her last week of living, that she actually passed away as a Jew.
Yeah.
And it's just, that was what, ever since she was a little person, she always wanted to be Jewish. And even her friends, most of her friends are Jewish. And they said, you know, "Jen, you're more Jewish than we are," which was quite, quite sweet. You know, they always used to say that to her.
Yeah.
So she did. She had a really, it was quite challenging for her. And just as mom, quickly as the mom, well, the auntie mom, I just felt, because my kids were so close to them, and I couldn't see, you know, it was so difficult for me doing things for the children that I gave birth to and watching these other two children. It was just myself and my husband, we just felt we had to take them in because they had a very challenging life and we needed to give them some stability.
Yeah.
Which they did have when they moved in with us.
Absolutely, Andrea. And I don't want to give anything away, but how you were there, you know, with Jennifer and the Smagaing process and the rabbi and your husband and all the stories, and you've put it in this book. I definitely can see how it must have been cathartic and what a story it is, and what a gift to Jennifer. So thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for is passing the book on so I could read it. For people who are interested in getting their hands on a copy, how do they do that?
So there's a couple of ways. The one is to message me directly on my cell number, which is 073-397-0140. But I request that it either comes as a WhatsApp text or an SMS. You know, it's difficult to answer the phones all the time. I prefer, you know, the text. And then I will sort out the book for them. Or alternatively, it's on quite a number of the ebook profiles. It's I'll just give you a couple of them. It's on Amazon with Kindle, with Smashwords, Barnes & Noble. It's on Apple, Hoopla, Cloud Library. There are just so many of the digital platforms that it has been published onto, and it can either be bought as an ebook, as a digital book, or it can also be ordered as a paperback through the digital platforms.
Fantastic. Thank you, Andrea. So 073-397-0140. Thank you so much.
That's correct.
Jennifer's Journey, a heartfelt story of love and loss. Thanks for joining us, Andrea.